from deep inside your radio.
In all the annals of athletic competition, no activity is more challenging to the Olympic spirit than competitive dog poisoning. Yes, it's true. Thousands of stray dogs will be poisoned in anticipation of the upcoming Olympic Games in Athens, despite a campaign by the SPCA to prevent their slaughter. The animal welfare charity says the strays will be killed, ladies and gentlemen, because the Greek authorities fear that the sight of packs of dogs roaming the streets will damage their efforts to use the games to show the world that their country is modern and civilized. There are an estimated 15,000 stray dogs in Athens, and although the government has taken some action to remove them from the streets without killing them, the SPCA says that local authorities will not have the resources to round up the animals and keep them in shelters during the games. Officially, the Greek authorities say there will be no mass poisoning. There are, however, only one or two shelters in Athens that can take dogs, and they're already overcrowded. So the Greeks face the choice of leaving the dogs roaming the streets during the Olympics or poisoning them. Greece's fledgling animal welfare groups, yeah, that's how modern and civilized they are. Animal welfare groups are fledgling. Ooh, there's one doing, it's fledgling right now. Stop fledgling over there. Said that the mass slaughter of strays had already begun. 80 dogs were recently found dead in the coastal resort of Saronida, where some members of the British team will stay. Greetings, welcome. Here are your dead dogs. One animal welfare activist said there's been a big increase in poisonings lately, and we expect it to rise sharply as the games get closer. Says an official of the SPCA, a lot of the local authorities in Greece simply don't know how to deal with dogs humanely. He said mass poisoning was barbaric and a short-term fix that would not solve the problem of strays. Poisoning animals is a criminal offense in Greece, but it's also a traditional method of controlling the stray population. So many local authorities turn a blind eye to the practice and actively engage in it themselves. The problem has been made worse by a macho mentality that finds it unnatural to neuter dogs and cats. Are we modern and civilized yet? You be the judge. As Olympic dog poisoning gets ready to roll. Hello, welcome to the show.
Don't feel Don't you want to ride in my survival car? We can take the long way home through Central Park. Funny how the ground can find my wheels. I'm going where the road ain't there. And only riding on the path we made to Union Square. Doing what the young folks do in West Coast towns. Plowing like a banshee through the overground. Funny how the ground can find my wheels. I'm going where the road won't tear. And only riding on the path we made to Union Square. Everybody hit the ground. I think I might have missed my calling. Everybody turn around. The light's about to change. You better stand aside. Why you wanna walk?
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer. Doing it again, another edition of the show, ladies and gentlemen. It persists like a rash. If show persists, see your doctor. Ladies and gentlemen, album sales, this is frightening, because it would suggest that the record companies have been BSing us for years. How can that be? Album sales in the United States for the first half of 2004 are 7% ahead of last year's midway point, putting the recording industry on a track to end a three-year slump. I guess all the kids have stopped downloading, huh? Sales in the first 6 months of this year totaled 305.7 million units. Hey, that's moving a lot of product. The same time, growth in digital downloads has exploded. With nearly 54 million tracks purchased in the first 26 weeks of this year. There were just 19 million in the second half of last year. Those are paid downloads. That doesn't include the, what do they call it now? Piracy? Yeah. On Thursday, the Recording Industry Association announced that music downloads would be eligible for gold and platinum awards for the first time. So they'll be giving Grammys to pirates before very long. But how could that be, ladies and gentlemen? Didn't the record business tell us for years that downloads were killing, that was responsible for the slump in sales? Would this mean that the records were responsible for a slump in sales? Ladies and gentlemen, more on Curveball. Yeah. We got to do some other things. We got to keep the mood light and summery before we get down to it. So, in a light and summery mood, tales of airport security. This will cheer you up big time. For a country color-coded yellow. Dear Harry, when I travel, I typically place my camera and any film in a film bag to protect against X-rays. This often forces a visual inspection. As I left Las Vegas today, I put the gadget bag containing the now X-ray-proof camera on the conveyor belt. An ever-alert security agent insisted that I remove and place my army-style belt on the conveyor as well. This time my shoes, that needed inspection 2 days earlier, were apparently okay. He diligently checked my belt, but never peered into the contents of the X-ray-proof bag, large enough to contain a 35mm camera, flash unit, and many rolls of film. Your alert color still yellow? How about this? Dear Harry, recently my girlfriend and I visited Las Vegas. Isn't this wild? This is so cosmic. To meet with friends for a pre-holiday tourist and hiking trip. Upon unpacking, I noticed one of our friends unpacking a Leatherman all-purpose tool, which comes complete with wrench and multiple knives and cutting utensils. I asked whether he had any problems at the airport with the tool, and he said, "They never asked." Our other friend then chimed in to tell us he too had smuggled a Leatherman into Vegas. Upon returning home to Chicago, I realized I'd forgotten to remove from my backpack a metal butter knife my girlfriend had packed for one of our lunches. We'd flown back to Chicago on July 4th weekend. I then recalled the Vegas airport signs and intercom proclaiming that the weekend of the 4th would mean, quote, heightened security measures. But not that heightened. Tales of airport security, ladies and gentlemen, presented only for your entertainment, not to encourage anything. Okay, Curveball. Let's get down to it. The only, remember Curveball? Curveball was the source for the one of the main allegations in the pre-Iraq war intelligence. The only he was basically supplied to, his intelligence was supplied to us by another intelligence agency. So here we go. The only American who met him repeatedly warned the CIA before the war, that the Baghdad engineer, codenamed Curveball, appeared to be an alcoholic, and that his dramatic claims that Saddam Hussein had built a secret fleet of mobile germ weapons factories, were not reliable. Aside from that, he's cool. Well, he's got that good nickname. In response, the deputy director of the CIA's Weapons of Mass Destruction Task Force on Iraq suggested in a February 4, 2003 email that such doubts we're not welcome. Quote, as I said last night, let's keep in mind the fact that this war is going to happen regardless of what Curveball said or didn't say, and the powers that be probably aren't terribly interested in whether Curveball knows what he's talking about. However, he continued, in the interest of truth, we owe somebody a sentence or two of warning if you honestly have reservations, unquote. No evidence suggests such a warning was given. Curveball turned out to be a fraud. It's all based on the heels of the Senate Intelligence Committee's bipartisan report this week, condemning the CIA, but keeping mum on what else went on with regard to pre-war intelligence. A lot of chickens are finding their way home to the nest. That report was based on documents released by Senator Dianne Feinstein of the Intelligence Committee, supplementing the Intelligence Committee's report. The Niger yellow cake uranium claim. We now know a little bit more about why that survived as long as it did. This is from the British newspaper The Guardian. The White House was preparing a landmark speech for the president in Cincinnati, October 2002, in which Bush would say the Iraqi regime has been caught attempting to purchase up to 500 tons of uranium oxide from Africa. The CIA was aware that the claim was built largely on information passed to them by British intelligence, and the CIA struggled to get the line removed. We told Congress the Brits have exaggerated this issue, one senior CIA official wrote in a memo to the National Security Council, and the line was dropped from the speech in Cincinnati in October 2002. As we all now know, it reappeared in the President's State of the Union address the following January. According to the Senate Intelligence Committee, one CIA analyst reported being told by a staff member at the National Security Council that to remove all reference to Iraqi attempts to buy uranium in Africa would, quote, leave the British flapping in the wind, unquote. We were protecting the Brits. Yeah, we scared some Americans. But you don't want to leave the British flapping in the wind, do you? Could prove embarrassing. Tonight, on the BBC, accusations highlight a serious attempt in Britain to manipulate and politicize intelligence. Hey, thank God that didn't happen here. When Tony Blair said that the threat from Iraq was serious and current in the pre-war debate, the former deputy chief of the Defense Intelligence Staff said, quote, I could almost hear the collective raspberry going up around Whitehall, government building, when Blair made his comments. He also said Blair's public statements on Iraq prior to the war went beyond what professional analysts would have concluded from the evidence. Dr. Brian Jones, not the late Rolling Stones guitar player, he's a retired branch head at the Defense Intelligence Staff, said he could not relate to Blair saying he had a tremendous amount of information about Saddam's WMD arsenal crossing his desk. Jones said, no one on my staff had any visibility of large quantities of intelligence of that sort. And that's the way the Brits talk, I guess. A former senior intelligence chief in Britain said Tony... Now, this is weird. This is like saying the pound stops here. A former senior intelligence chief said Tony Blair should be held responsible for intelligence failings. Well, if you did that, you'd hold George... Dame Pauline Neville Jones, the former head of the Joint Intelligence Committee, says, quote, politicians are ultimately responsible for any failures of the intelligence services in the run-up to the Iraq War. She says the buck stops there. They don't have bucks. It's easy for her to say. Talk pounds, lady. And I don't think that the political layer in any country can escape the consequences of a systemic failure. Oh, yeah? Just watch. Tony Blair's claim that Saddam Hussein posed a current and serious threat to Britain is challenged by new allegations that Britain's spy chiefs have retracted the intelligence on which it was based. We didn't mean that. The supposed proof that the Iraqi dictator was still trying even just before the war to produce chemical and biological weapons was, of course, critical to the case for war. Yet, according to a senior intelligence source interviewed tonight on the BBC, MI6, the intelligence service in Britain, has taken the rare step of withdrawing the intelligence assessment that underpinned the claim that Saddam continued to produce WMD, an admission that it was fundamentally unreliable. The charge leaves Blair open to serious questions over why, if the nature of the proof had changed, he didn't tell the public that the evidence of WMD was crumbling beneath him. The Archbishop of Canterbury has warned that Blair would be judged before God for his actions over Iraq and suggesting he would struggle with his conscience. Asked how Blair would account for himself, the Archbishop of Canterbury said, "At the judgment seat." It's getting rough over there. Here, it's cool. It's cool. United Nations nuclear officials disagree with Washington over U.S. claims that we have the proper authority to transfer highly radioactive material out of Iraq. This is the radioactive material that was looted from Tawatha, one of the known Iraqi nuclear sites in the wake of the war. We've apparently recovered some of it. Nearly 2 tons of low-enriched uranium and approximately 1,000 highly radioactive items were placed under seal by the IAEA. But the United States disclosed this week the material was airlifted out of the country to an undisclosed Energy Department laboratory. Hey, Dick Cheney, are you over there? The IAEA, I've got Bush disease today, the IAEA was authorized to oversee the destruction of Iraq's nuclear program and monitor activities to ensure that the program was not revived. The American authorities just informed us of their intention to remove the materials. They never sought authorization of us, said the head of the IAEA's New York office. We say we didn't need the approval. We have the custody, says the U.S. representative. We have the permission of the Iraqi government to take this out of the country. Is okay?
Okay.
U.S. Energy Secretary called the secret airlift a major achievement in our non-proliferation efforts. Much like the spectacular major unachievement in failing to secure the site in the first place after the war ended. Hey, we can do it. We're the Yanks. And ladies and gentlemen, George Tenet, on his way out as head of the CIA, has told Congress the CIA is increasingly skeptical that Mohammed Atta, one of the hijackers from 9/11, met an Iraqi intelligence officer in Prague. Dick Cheney keeps saying it hasn't been disproved, but George Tenet, on his way out, says, I don't really think that happened. We think that didn't happen. But goodbye. Goodbye now. Ladies and gentlemen, you probably know by now that the microfilm, which would have been the ultimate proof. We had a story here about the AP, the Associated Press, suing for President Bush's complete National Guard records. Yes, I know. You thought that the complete ones had been released by the White House in March. So did the AP, but then it turned out they weren't, so they sued to get the complete records, which included microfilm of the payment records, which, you know, unlike paper, microfilm can't be fiddled with. So this week, the Defense Department agency in charge of old, forgotten financial records revealed that the microfilm had been accidentally destroyed in an attempt to save it. Yeah, it was doing the Vietnamese village thing. It destroyed itself in an attempt to be saved. And Florida election officials used a flawed method to come up with a listing of people believed to be convicted felons. This again. This is this year. A list they're recommending to be used to purge voter registration rolls. State officials acknowledged as much this week. As a result, voters identifying themselves as Hispanic are almost completely absent from the list, but a heck of a lot of them on that list are African Americans. Election officials denied any partisan motive in the use of this method that they adopted. This was absolutely unintentional, said a spokeswoman for the Florida Secretary of State. I don't know how it got by all those people without anyone noticing. This is Le Show with the apologies of the week coming your way next.
We're almost sorry.
No, we're really sorry. These are real apologies now, ladies and gentlemen. Real apologies. We unreservedly apologize to our readers for the mistake, says New York Post editor Carl Allen. The mistake? You know this. The Post front-paged an exclusive that John Kerry's selection for his vice presidential running mate was Dick Gephardt. The owner of the New York Post said in an interview on Tuesday, everybody made a mistake and they're embarrassed and they've apologized for it, and it happens even on NBC sometimes, said Rupert Murdoch. But later in the week, several newspapers reported, although the Post denied. See, the interesting thing about this story was it had no byline. Usually front-page exclusives, even at the New York Post, bear a byline because the reporter's kind of proud getting an exclusive. And the question was, why was there no byline? And this answer came later in the week when several New York newspapers reported that the source for the story was Rupert Murdoch himself, who called up late at night, had the original front page story scrapped. It was about something happening on Long Island. And dictated the story himself. And then, of course, backed away, saying, everybody made mistakes. And Rupert Murdoch, ladies and gentlemen. I could tell you some stories. The hotline. Hold on. Let me just... Hello?
Hello. May I speak to Harry, please?
Yeah, this is Harry. I'm on the air.
Harry.
Yes.
I got a tip for you.
Yeah, the news tip line. Yes.
Shut your friggin' cake hole. All the best, mate, from a fellow Yank.
Okay, thank you very much. More apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. Chinese Secretary for Health, Welfare, and Food. That's a weird cabinet position. E.K. Yeo has apologized to the people of Hong Kong and the families of 299 people who died during last year's SARS outbreak. He vowed to take full responsibility for any mistakes in handling the outbreak and the deficiencies exposed in the public health care system. California Education Secretary Dick Riordan. Oh, here's a swift kick in the Dick Riordan. Has apologized for joking that a child's name meant, quote, stupid dirty girl, unquote. In a videotaped exchange at the Santa Barbara Central Library this week, a girl asked Riordan if he knew that her name meant Egyptian goddess. Riordan, who apparently believed he'd been asked what her name meant, replied, it means stupid dirty girl. Some in the room laughed nervously, and the girl again told Riordan the meaning of her name. Hey, that's nifty, he said. Local television station videotaped the exchange. Friday, Riordan issued a statement saying he had teased the girl. I immediately apologized to her, and I want to do so again for the misunderstanding. Governor Schwarzenegger, who appointed Riordan to the cabinet, said in his statement that the comments were unacceptable in any context. We must always focus on encouraging and supporting children, he said. Riordan was in Santa Barbara to promote his summer book club. Featuring stupid, dirty books. Dateline Mexico City. Mexico apologized for disrupting the military funeral of a U.S. Marine killed in Iraq, but insisted it had to make sure its laws outlawing foreign troops from carrying weapons on Mexican soil were upheld. U.S. Ambassador Tony Garza had sent a blistering diplomatic note demanding to know why Mexican troops interrupted the funeral. The Mexican soldiers took issue with non-working ceremonial rifles carried by two Marines who traveled from the U.S. Garza said the Marines had worked everything out beforehand. Mexico's Foreign Relations Secretary responded to Garza's note, saying it was sorry the actions had occurred during the ceremony that causing the interruption of such a solemn act, but Mexico's soldiers had an obligation to ensure the law wasn't being violated. They take the law seriously in Mexico, don't you know? Former Enron Corporation founder Kenneth Lay has apologized to classmates via email for the commotion his indictment has caused. Not the stockholders, his classmates. Columbia, Mississippi's Hickman High School. He said he and his family were doing fine. That's good news. And he was pained by what his former employees have had to go through. Okay. The email was forwarded to about 100 members of the 1960 class. Okay. Thank you, Ken. We appreciate that. West Palm Beach County Sheriff candidate Ken Eggleston apologized this week for including an anti-Semitic phrase in a campaign flyer sent to homes in predominantly Jewish areas last month. Eggleston's four-page brochure charged that the sheriff's office tolerates anti-Semitism and racism, and he faulted fellow candidate Rick Bradshaw for failing to speak out about such alleged misconduct. Eggleston said he still supports the flyer's content but apologizes for the offensive red-lettered phrase scrawled across a sheriff's badge-style star on the cover page. Yeah, probably right. And the Lexington Herald Leader of Lexington, Kentucky, last Sunday featured a prominent clarification on its front page, apologizing for the newspaper's failures to cover the 1960s civil rights movement. It went by him. The notice accompanied a series of stories entitled Front Page News Back Page Coverage and numerous black and white pictures taken by an independent photographer. It's come to the editor's attention the Herald Leader neglected to cover the civil rights movement, the clarification read. We regret the omission. Movement lasted about 15 years. Lexington newspapers at the time occasionally published short stories about the local civil rights movement. Photographs rarely appeared. Most articles about the black community appeared under the rubric Colored Notes. Apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. A copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Isn't it? Yeah, I think it is. So back to Tony Blair for a minute. Tony Blair has acknowledged now that weapons of mass destruction might never be found in Iraq. But he refused to apologize. See, he's not sorry for going to war. He told House of Commons that Saddam's stockpile may have been hidden, removed, or destroyed. Well, yeah. Until this week, the Prime Minister has refused to concede that the stockpiles of weapons may not have existed. He described as inherently implausible the suggestion that Saddam could have destroyed his weapons and not told anyone about it. I have to accept, he says now, that we haven't found them and that we may never find them. He was asked by a conservative in the parliament to say sorry. He still insisted that Saddam had been a threat to the region and the world. I genuinely believe that those weapons were there. He said Iraq was where the West had to take a stand against rogue states developing such weapons. Of course, even though he didn't have the weapons anymore. It's been quite a journey in the last year and a half, ladies and gentlemen. Dick Cheney, Don Rumsfeld, President Bush, David Kaye, Tony Blair. Just to keep everything straight in your mind here.
There is no doubt that Saddam Hussein now has weapons of mass destruction. No doubt. No doubt. He's amassed large clandestine stockpiles of biological weapons. No doubt. No doubt.
Possesses and produces chemical and biological weapons.
No doubt. No doubt.
It turns out we were all wrong, probably, in my judgment. And that is most disturbing. All wrong.
No doubt.
All wrong.
No doubt.
All wrong.
No doubt.
All wrong.
No, no, no. Saddam Hussein now has weapons of mass destruction.
All wrong.
Now. No. Now. No.
Large clandestine stockpiles.
All wrong.
Large clandestine stockpiles.
All wrong.
Large piles. Large piles. Produces chemical and biological weapons. Large piles.
No. No.
It is highly unlikely that there were large stockpiles of deployed, militarized chemical and biological weapons. Large stockpiles. Highly unlikely. Large piles.
No doubt.
Likely.
Produces.
No.
Weapons.
No. No. No.
I have to accept that we haven't found them. That we may not find them. We don't know what has happened to them. They could have been removed, they could have been hidden, they could have been destroyed.
Doubt. Doubt.
We don't know what has happened to them.
No.
We don't know what has happened to them. I have to accept.
Doubt.
I have to accept.
Large piles.
That is most disturbing. Most disturbing. Most disturbing. Most disturbing. Most disturbing.
Conquistador, your stallion stands in need of company. Like some angel's haloed brow, you reek of purity. I see your armor-plated breast has long since lost its sheen, and in your death mask face there are no signs which can be seen. And though I hope for something to find, I could see no place to unwind. Conquistador, a vulture sits upon your silver sheath, and in your rusty scabbard now the sand has taken seat. And though your jewel-encrusted blade has not been plundered, still the sea has won.
pay my respect. Though I came to jeer at you, I leave now with regret. And as the gloom begins to fall, I see there is no, only y'all. Though you came with soul held high, you did not conquer, only die. Though I hoped for something to find, I could see no place to unwind. Though I hoped for something to find, I could see no place to unwind. Hey!
A conservative activist calls 9/11 on Fahrenheit 911.
And public television gets it all down in black and white.
Gotta be the Sunsplashed Extra Access tonight for the early part of July 2004. Hi, everybody. I'm Pat Mungo.
And I'm Mike DeVere.
Mike, have you seen Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 911?
Sure, Pat. I was with you at the tabloid TV screening.
Mm.
It's still packing them in the seats.
Yep. But now the other side of the political fence wants to do some seat packing, too. Hollywood conservatives, like their political brethren outside show business, are mad as hell about Michael Moore's anti-Bush movie. And they've decided to strike back with the aid of one of television's best-known conservatives. Ann Coulter's new documentary film is called The Truth About Fatso.
Michael Moore talks all the time about the truth. You know, what's the biggest, most obvious truth this mouthpiece for terrorists chooses to ignore? The fact that he's a big, fat piece of pig meat. Of course, the traitors' liberal media don't want you to notice that little fact, so that's what our movie is all about.
Conservative producer Bill Cronenberger, whose last hit was the female twist on Top Gun, Booty on Her Country, put the whole thing together late last month.
I'd just seen Fahrenheit, and it ticked me off big time that this guy was getting a free pass from the media. Not about his distortions necessarily, but about being such a big tub of lard. Well, it turned out Anne was between books. She'd kind of a case of writer's block trying to come up with a hotter title than her last one, Traitors. And, you know, call her sexy or call her skinny, we know the camera loves her.
In the film, Ann Coulter asks people on the street and in the TV studio she frequents one question.
How much do you think Michael Moore weighs?
250? 260?
Nah, he's at least 300.
Dude, he's not heavier than Shaq.
I don't know how much he weighs, but he's in hot at that country if he's not pounded down to garlic.
We also got Edison Spurlock, the brother of the guy in Super Size Me, to see how many McDonald's shakes you'd have to consume in 30 days to get as big as Michael Moore. It's disgusting, and it's great.
But even before The Truth About Fatso hits the theaters, critics are suggesting it's playing fast and loose with the truth. Liberal talk show host Al Franken suggested this week that Spurlock didn't really consume all those milkshakes.
One of the lighting guys who worked on a picture swears to me that Spurlock just put on a fat suit. I mean, can you believe these people?
As you can tell, the fur is flying, and the fat will soon be in the fire. Sure beats the alternative. The Truth About Fatso will be in theaters nationwide shortly before Ann Coulter's next meal.
Public television's getting a facelift this fall. Big Bird, nature shows, and British dramas will be making room for the network's first sitcom called Black and White.
The name of the show operates on many different levels, both literal and symbolic. On the most obvious level, it's a comedy about a white police patrolman and a black police sergeant and the sisters they married.
Aviva Schlarman has moved over from her longtime radio perch to write and produce Black and White for National Public Television.
And then in Los Angeles, where the show is set for its gritty reality, the police cars are called Black and Whites. And then, because we do have to live up to our mandate of doing pieces that you can't see elsewhere, The show is being shot entirely in black and white.
Black and White will be the first comedy series about law enforcement since the legendary Barney Miller. And old-school rapper-turned-co-star Ice Crystal says there's something else special about these 12 episodes.
We're trying to keep it realer than you can on commercial television. So this is going to be the 22nd comedy show ever to be done without, you know, a laugh track or an audience, you know what I'm saying? Also, unlike commercial TV, where the shows have to be like 22 minutes to leave room for all the ads, we could do full 27-minute shows, except during pledge weeks. That's what I'm talking about.
We're also taking advantage of the public television environment to do some of our storytelling, because it's about stories. So in the third week, someone sends an envelope containing white powder to Jim Lehrer. And he shows a side of himself you've never seen before. A vulnerability, a sweetness, and a real gift for physical comedy.
Black and White will debut this fall. In most cities, it will air before Nova or after Frontline. Or somewhere else.
We've hit the video wall for now. But Extra Access Tonight comes caroming back tomorrow with the results of our latest EAT poll.
We asked you, which was more believable, documentaries or reality shows? And the results will have you feigning surprise.
Till then, I'm Pat Mungo.
And I'm Mike DeVere.
So long from Culver City.
Make me feel good. Kisses like the honey from the bee. Love me till I'm low with ecstasy. Soothe me. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, bringing democracy to Iraq requires a breath of truth, of fresh air. So imagine how shocked the Iraqis must be if they were to know this. Nearly half the staff of the Voice of America has signed a petition to be sent to members of Congress accusing the Broadcasting Board of Governors of dismantling the nation's radio beacon. It also accuses the board, an independent entity responsible for all government-sponsored broadcasting, of launching new services in the Middle East with no editorial accountability. We're being bled white to support this expensive and ill-advised operation in the Middle East, a Voice of America editor told the Capitol Hill newspaper, The Hill. He says he fears reprisals if he were identified. That's the way we do it in a democracy. He added, it's shameful and also very sad that we're missing an opportunity to be doing what we should be doing. More than 460 out of an estimated 1,000 Voice of America staff members have signed the petition. Major complaint involves the board's new services in the Middle East, Radio Sawa, Al Hura, and Radio Farda, which the petitioners say provide inadequate news coverage and do not operate under the charter of the Voice of America, which guarantees balanced reporting. Defenders of the new services say their offerings, mainly music with some news, appeal to younger listeners. But the VOA says reaching educated people, the leaders and activists in a community, is just as important. He said the board members with their business backgrounds place too much emphasis on market share. According to the petition, both Radio Sawa and Al Hura have not reported important breaking news, including, in one case, the capture of Saddam Hussein. Eh. Yeah, we're teaching him democracy, all right? The right way. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived on your computer whenever you want it. KCRW.com and HarryShearer.com, and now available as a free download at www.audible.com/LeShow. And it would be just like if we could all recognize Greece as a modern and civilized country, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? Alrighty. Thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. Le Show Playlists available at harryshearer.com. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to our Pittsburgh and San Diego desks. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.